and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast. It's January 2023 and we have got a cracker of a podcast for you today to get you ready to have the best year possible. On today's episode, we are joined by business coach and co-founder of Ascend 360, Jonathan Mills. Jonathan is the owner of four businesses and he is exceptional at time management, prioritizing tasks, leading people. And what we talked to him today about is how he manages and allocates his time in effective ways. So if you are somebody that's time poor, you're going to find this episode full of gold for how to prioritize and delegate to your team. We talked to him about his journaling practices and how he manages to maintain a calm presence for his team when under pressure. We talked to him about how he stays present and how he prioritizes his family, his gym, how he manages his energy levels as a leader of four organizations. And we also talked to him about goal setting and intentions and being purposeful in how you approach the way you live your life. It's a brilliant episode to listen to anytime, but a particularly good one to start the year. We hope you enjoy it. Now, before we jump into the podcast, just a side note, we are approaching this new year like a new season to the podcast. We were somewhat sporadic with releasing podcast episodes in 2022 for various personal and professional reasons, but positively, Scaffold Coaching had a great year in 2022. Just as a recap for those of you that are new to the podcast, Scaffold Coaching is a business that helps organisations to develop better leaders. We are a provider of leadership coaching, delivered one-on-one, virtually or face-to-face, and we have a Building Better Leaders programme, which is an interactive workshop programme between 1 to 12 modules that can be delivered in webinar format or face-to-face, all developed and tailored to your business to help your organisation build better leaders. If this is something that is of interest to you, please do get in touch with John or I at scaffoldcoaching.com. But for now, over to the podcast. Jonathan, welcome to the podcast. Happy New Year.
Morning, both. It's an early start, isn't it?
It's not that early for us, 8:30. I'm a 5:30 starter, but welcome. So, Jono, would you just take 5 minutes to introduce yourself and share your story with our listeners, please?
5 minutes. I think that's a long time to share my story. So I grew up in the Midlands, football crazy when I was a kid, quite a talented youngster. And I ended up at 16 going to play football on an apprenticeship at Cambridge United. So I spent 2 years at Cambridge United, played in the sort of youth team, reserve team. Unfortunately, I didn't manage to carve out a career there. And then once I left Cambridge, I stumbled into a football coaching career. Always said I wasn't going to be a football coach and inevitably ended up doing what I said I wasn't going to do.
As such is life.
Yeah, absolutely. So from there, basically, Premier Soccer, as it was back in the days, was set up. And I remember back when I was 18, it was Premier Soccer. The basis of Premier Soccer was a bag of balls and a stack of cones and a car and just kind of driving around London and Hertfordshire and Bedfordshire and teaching kids. What then happened from there was that the CEO, who's still the CEO today, actually set up a very, very loose franchise model where I think it was about five of us originally that were set up, and we were each designated an area. And at the age of 18, I was responsible for a set of schools in Bedfordshire. So that was really the start of my entrepreneurial journey. And it's quite, when I think back at some of the things that I did back then as a business owner and a sort of leader of coaches, it's a little bit embarrassing to think about some of the stuff that I did, but Yeah, that's how it started. And then sort of moving forward, sort of fast forward 24 years, Premier Soccer is now Premier Education. And I own three franchised areas in that business within the network now. That business teaches, we teach about 8,500 kids a week across East London and kind of Essex. In between having franchises, I've worked pretty much across the whole of Premier Education in sort of multitude of different roles, recruiting franchisees, kind of an operational function. I recently had a non-exec role on the board. And then in between that, I had a property business, lettings and investment company. And then moving forward, sort of since I sold my lettings and investment company a few years ago, I've then set up Ascend 360, which Rach, you're aware of, and I do some consultancy kind of non-exec work as well.
Wow. So that's quite a career. So take us back to the 18-year-old you. And you just skirted over that really quite quickly, that you just fell into this like franchise, you know, business. And I guess there is an aspect of somebody handing you an opportunity. But what is it in you that was like, I want to lead people, I want to have my own business, versus did it ever enter your head to just go and get a job in a sports shop or just go and go to uni or something like that?
First of all, I never thought about having my own business. That never entered my head. And the CEO who owns Premier Education, he actually, and this leads into quite a good point about leadership actually, but he was my manager at Cambridge United. So there was a real bond there in terms of a trust. And obviously because I played underneath him and kind of worked closely with him, he knew me well. And he trusted me. And I think probably one of a great leadership thing that I've learned from him was empowerment and trust. And, you know, he does that better than anyone I've ever seen. In relation to football, he would give people opportunities that should never have been given opportunities. And those people actually went on to have really successful careers. And it was the same with business as well, in that, you know, as an 18-year-old, you know, he saw something in a group of us and gave us a chance and kind of empowered us. So I think that without that trust, you know, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today, you know, and I wouldn't be, no one would have given me that opportunity, to be honest, as a fresh-faced 18-year-old who didn't really know what he was doing.
What was it about him? What were his traits, or what are his traits that really are stand out for you?
The trust and empowerment that he gives to people. The downside of that is sometimes he would give opportunities and see the best in people that possibly shouldn't. But like I say, the upside of that was that he would give people opportunities and empower people and let them flourish, you know, really, really kind of trust them, really, really trust them to make things work.
It's, it's such a fundamental leadership trait, as you say, Jono. I guess the business that we're all in terms of coaching is if you think about life, life's all about solving problems, isn't it? And so what we do is to help people prepare for how they can set about solving those problems. And I was thinking earlier on today, before we came on this podcast, about how, you know, the world's, you look at around in the news and the strikes in the NHS, the strikes on the trains, and there's, you know, cost of living crisis, there's energy problems, all the rest of it. And they're all things that we generally can't do anything about. But it got me thinking ahead of talking to you today about how what we do is really to help people prepare for solving problems. If you have to be able to solve your own problems first, or prepare for those first, Does that help navigate this world that we live in? Because you know that you're doing something for yourself. Is that what we're doing as coaches? And is that the situation you found when you were 18 and this guy was trusting you, he was empowering you to do your things and just letting you get on with it without directing you? Long
yeah,
way around asking that question, but...
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think the whole sort of problem solving... I mean, when I was at Cambridge, you were very much an independent person and you had to... It was a bit of a dogfight back sort of 20 years ago. It was pretty brutal. And if you weren't strong and if you didn't find solutions and if you weren't streetwise, then you'd get eaten alive. So I think that was kind of, I nearly said bullied, but it wasn't bullied. That was kind of something you had to adapt to quickly to be able to survive. And I think that has stood me in good stead around the problem. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, as being a leader and a business owner, fundamentally, you're just solving problems all day, every day. And I think that then translates into being a coach. I know Rachel probably laughed because my default go-to is to kind of solve problems and sometimes solve problems on behalf of my clients. That isn't always the best thing to do, but yeah, because I've been doing that for a long time, it's sort of it comes quite natural.
You and I have known each other for a while. I've been in your business coaching groups, and just by way of observation, you do run four businesses. You lead a hell of a lot of people. You've got a lot of people in your business coaching group. My observations of you are you never seem like somebody that is flustered. You've always got time for people. You are exceptionally well organized. You are always present in any engagement I've had with you. And you're a very successful investor. And you do seem to, I know everything's never as it seems, but manage the family, exercise, business dynamic. You're never somebody who's like, I haven't got time for that. That would be my observations of you, which is why we brought you on the podcast to share just some of the things that help you keep living with intention and that you are hopefully being a good role model to your daughter. So that's by way of intro as to the subject. Talk to us about how you approach life in that regard to do what you do.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that. So that's nice to sign. It's funny how people perceive you and how you perceive yourself. So in turn, I guess some of the things that go through my head on a daily basis are, when I have a task or when I have a job, my default go-to is how can I do this more efficiently or who can do it for me? That is, and that may be perceived as being lazy, maybe, but my first intention is around making that task easier or delegating it. So mm-hmm. I think about systems. Sometimes I'll just discard stuff, you know, if I don't have to do stuff, I'll just discard it. I'm also really, really careful about how I allocate my time and what I say yes to. I mean, I don't often leave the house. That sounds as though I'm a hermit, but I'm not. But I mean, as you know, Rach, you know, you've asked me to come to Doncaster at times. And it's not that I'm being ignorant. It's just that I'm very precious around how I spend my time at a given date. So I do decline stuff. I don't say yes to that much. And I'm just kind of really quite careful about what I do in my time, if that answers the question. What was there was another
yes,
part to that.
That's a great start to the question. So let's just slow some of this stuff down and make it a bit more digestible for people that are perhaps in busy leadership roles in corporations. And I think the thing that John and I hear a lot is I'm time poor, or I don't have time for that, or I have to track all my time. And I think what you've explained there is a really great leadership trait around the first thing to ask yourself is, do I need to do this or can somebody else do it? So that would be, I think, the first take out of what you just said. What I really liked is you even saying some people might perceive this as lazy, but actually what you've managed to do in that default position is most people, the majority of leaders we work with, their default position is it is easier to just do it myself than to train somebody else. And what you've managed to reverse engineer is your default position is straight away, can somebody else delegate it? Doesn't matter how long it takes, but do I've got somebody I trust or that I can empower to do it. Elaborate on that a little bit for us, because a lot of people that we work with not be listening to this podcast are time poor and would love to delegate more, but they see it as it's the adage thing, isn't it? Give a man a fishing rod, he can feed himself for a year. Give him a fish, he'll feed himself for the day. But it's so hard to spend that time up front changing that mindset.
Yeah, I think, and again, you and I have had this conversation, Rach, and I certainly haven't got this on point with all of my businesses, particularly the Ascend business, which is the newer business. I think in terms of with leadership with my teams, so with the education team, it's all about giving them an outcome, so KPIs, simple KPIs in most instances, and also getting, sounds strange but simple, but is getting them to take ownership of their own work. And then it's all about, for me, it's all about them reporting into me and presenting me with the data. So I don't know if that is, that does that answer that?
Yeah, that does. And it is about, I think the way that you explained it that was nice is that you constantly are reminding yourself that your time is precious and that you're not leaving the house unless it's intentional. You're not going to a meeting unless it's intentional and that it will add value. But that starts by being really clear on the expectations with your team around what output you require and what information. So as long as that communication's there, that allows you to be really precious about your time and intentional about how you spend it.
Yeah, and to add to that as well, I mean, and this is easier in business, but I've got a value on my time, so I know what my time is worth on a pounds per hour basis. So every time, so very simply, if I can go and do I don't know, a meeting where I'm getting paid £500, for example, for that hour. And then I've got a task of sending a bookkeeping, for example. Well, that bookkeeping job, I can pay somebody, which I do, £20 an hour to do that job and then do more of the £500 an hour tasks. So as a leader, I'm always thinking about that, always. And even if that means, and you made this point, even if that means I have to take a little bit of time to show somebody how to do something, it's better doing that because you're kind of giving yourself time leverage rather than just doing it yourself. But it always comes back to the value of my time.
What advice then, Jono, would you give to somebody who works for somebody else, or somebody who works in the corporate world or in a different business where they're actually employed and they have a team of people, but they're just stacked with work? Because I can understand how it works when you work for yourself, but in order to do it when you're actually employed, how can people use their time better? What advice would you give them?
The same as what I would give a business owner. I would say, first of all, I would ask somebody I'd ask somebody else to have, I'd have a conversation with somebody else and I'd say, look, can you put your eyes on what I'm doing and give me some feedback around the things I'm doing? And I do this all the time. I'll sit at home and I'll say to Abby, Yeah, I know you. Rach was saying, I'm never flustered. I am. And I'll say to my wife, I've got all these things, like, you know, and she will give me feedback and say, do you need to do that? No. Okay. Do you need to do that? No. Who can do that? Who can do that? And this is exactly what I do with my clients is we'll sit down and we'll literally write a list of the tasks they do on a day-to-day basis, and we'll strip them out. And it would be the same with any leader. You know, first of all, get somebody else's eyes on your work and what you're doing, so they, because they will give you good input regardless of who they are. And then is to just literally go down what we would call our roles and responsibilities and see what can be delegated out and what can be removed.
So you don't need to know necessarily what skills or what technical knowledge you need to be able to do those jobs. You're basically going through a list of that person's responsibilities and how do they allocate them best. So similarly to how you talked about the lady who you've been coaching, and that you pretty much leave her up to her own devices and she comes back to you and she's, I've done this, I've done that, I've done the other. How do you best prepare her for that so that she has got a level of responsibility that she knows she's accountable for to you when she actually comes back having done whatever she's done?
How do we prepare? I mean, we're consistent in terms of our meetings. That's one of the key things. What I've found, particularly recently working within small businesses, is that one, you just have to start. So you have to have like what I would describe as a version one. And your version one is, you know, is always, you know, it's going to be poor when you look back retrospectively. So first of all, this is our start point. You know, we need these numbers reported on, and then we're good with having a weekly meeting at the same time every week where she will come back in and she will give us that, you know, she will give us that data, that reporting. She then gets challenged. There's mistakes, you know, there's challenges along the way. And, you know, we will then just give her sort of feedback and then she'll come back the next week. But it takes time. You know, it takes time. It's not something that just happens automatically, but it's all about sort of version one, you know, getting started. If you think about Apple, you know, Apple constantly update their phones, don't they? What are we on now? Apple 14. And I think that mindset works really well, because if you look back to, you know, the iPhone 1, you could probably not even use it now because it'd be that sort of obsolete, but it was a start. And that's how, that would be my mentality towards that.
I think what was really, it's an underplayed strength that people have the best of intention to, but very rarely deliver on, is that consistency. It's about having, if you're a leader of people and they have got an output that you want from them, to meet with them at the same time every week and to be very clear on those expectations. And I think when that falls away and shifts to like every other week, or you miss one or the other, that's when the leader starts to fall into doing the do, because they don't feel that they've got that constant communication. That's been one of my observations anyway. Yeah. And I think you underestimate the power of being consistent.
Yeah, and to give a sort of working example of that, one of the clients that I'm doing some consultancy with at the moment, it's a family-owned business, brilliant, amazing business, really nice people, got really good people in there. They just had no consistency. And we set out, so take you back to the original point, John, we set out an expectation. And that was, to start with, was a one-page, half-a-page document with about 5 or 6 bullet points to say, this is what we want you to provide for us on a weekly basis. And interestingly, the first meeting, we sent it to them and I don't think they believed that we really wanted it. And they came, we held them to account. They didn't deliver. We sent them away. The next time they came and there was better information, we gave them feedback. The next time they came, and actually the third time, which was just before Christmas, they came back with even better information than what we'd even wanted, because they now know what the expectation is and they understand that we're going to hold them to account.
So how pleased were they when they came back the third time with themselves?
Yeah, they were chuffed, because the owners of the business sat in the meeting and they gave them praise for giving that, for providing that really good data.
Yeah. So there's something about being regularly in touch with your clients, whether they be a group, whether they be individuals, whether they be a business, and really holding them accountable to it. But there are some people who are more consistent than others, aren't there, Rachel? I'm not the most consistent of people. When I'm on it, I'm like going 100 miles an hour, and you won't knock me off it. I can't maintain that. And so I have this bigger, if you can imagine a curve, it loops up and down, and it's quite the varying on the range is quite a lot, rather than just this nice little dotted line across the middle. What is it that you really do to people, for people that are more like me, that are a bit more up and down? How do you get somebody like that to be more consistent?
Well, and this goes back to the, this will go lead into the around sort of how you plan your time. I think no individual, no leader is the same. And I think back in the day, I would have tried to say, this is how you do it. Whereas these days I'm softening up a little. Rach is laughing because she knows I'm very much a this is how you do it type person. I think when it comes to, it's figuring out what can work for that individual or that leader. So if what I would say to that is, how are you mapping out how you operate? And in terms of sort of planning your week and setting yourself up to operate in a way that you know that will work for you, not necessarily fitting into a specific type of system.
Do you want to give us an example of how you approach that? Because I think that's a nice add-on to, we've talked about how people can be more consistent in how they manage their teams, but how can people better manage their own time so they show up as a more consistent leader? Give us an example, because I know you do like your Sunday evening planning. So talk us through how you approach your weeks with time planning.
Yeah, first of all, I'm not an early riser. And I fought this for 15, 20 years. I do my best work I can do good creative work in the evening. I'm never up early. Every Sunday, I spend about an hour and a half planning my diary, and that is a holistic approach to planning my diary. So that would encapsulate family time, that would encapsulate gym time, that would encapsulate work and anything related to my health. And the key is to, and sometimes I catch myself moving slots around in my diary, because it's all about the balance of how that operates. So, and we were talking off camera, but if, for example, I've had a hard day, every Tuesday is quite a tough, intense day, Wednesday mornings will be light. So I'll have a later start and I'll ensure that I'm not doing kind of heavy, thoughtful work first thing on Wednesday morning. Monday mornings, I mean, my diary is the same every single week, pretty much. So I don't need to look at it to know typically what I'm doing. So Monday mornings typically is never an early start. It's a 9:30 start because, everyone's on the go, or I'm on the go slow on a Monday morning. But it's being able to, I think for a leader, is to make sure that you're able to operate consistently day in, day out, and not, a bit like going to the gym. If you go to the gym and you pick up the heaviest weights and you just try and, smash out as many weights as you can, that's great in that instance. But the next day, you're not going to be able to walk. And it's the same with operating a business and operating your diary. It's being able to maintain and deliver consistently day in, day out?
So I'm just going to unpick that for people that are working in roles where they lead big teams and yep. they're always seeing, you know, the work quite reactively, like what trickles down from above is dictates the way they live their lives. You know, how many people yep. do we coach, John, that aren't getting home till 7-8 o'clock at night, are coming to us saying, I haven't seen my kids for a few days, I'm working on days off, et cetera, et cetera. What I'm hearing you say, Jono, and chime in at the relevant point on this, is that you take control of your time allocation. And to John's point around, you're very aware of when your energy is up and slumps. So you're probably actually naturally a bit more inconsistent like John, but you yeah. plan your day around, you know, Tuesday you go hard, Wednesday you're soft, yep. Monday you, and you map your week, but it's consistent. So your team know where you are and what you're doing. They've got their set timing with them. You know how you show up and what you need to do. You can stick to it. You've got time blocks, so family and gym don't slip, and they're prioritized. And I think what I've taken away from this, that somebody that works in a business could take away from this, is that you talked about, you know, your time has a value, like you used the £500 example, but people need to start putting more of a value on their time with their kids or their, and like actually thinking about what is the value of that time rather than letting it be something that slips. So if you start to almost prioritize walking your child to school or picking them up on a Thursday afternoon from school, you block that out because it's intentional. Absolutely. It's less likely to shift, which is what we tend to let work do to us, is it dictates and moves us around. And actually your time mapping every Sunday based on your energy levels, what you prefer and what's important. Anything to add on that?
Yeah, as I think as a leader, in a corporate environment, I mean, selfishly, I imagine that most people within the, not selfishly, sorry, but thinking about themselves, a leader in a corporate world is trying to add as much value so they can get paid more. So it's the same equation as what it would be in a business. That, and I know I've done this when I've worked in consultancy roles in the education business. It's being able to put a value of the work that I've done. So as a leader, I would just be asking them, what are the highest value tasks that can bring the greatest value to the company, which ultimately will reflect on the success they have in that world. That is not going to be, you know, replying to emails. It isn't. So I guess I would be challenging those leaders to consider what are the highest value tasks they need to be doing and what are potential solutions to, you know, to discarding those £10 an hour tasks. You know, and as an owner of a business, if one of my senior leadership teams came to me and said, look, I can operate better if I have this or if we do this, why wouldn't you give them that resource and support?
I think one of the things I'm taking away from this, Jono, is even though you said yourself, your diary is fairly predictable, if you like, week to week, you still go through the process of doing that every Sunday.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people get into a sort of a rhythm, if you like, if you want to talk about a week being a rhythm, and then don't do that. And maybe that's the missing bit. That's maybe where things begin to slide, because there's not enough focus on the purpose of doing it.
Yeah, and I think that, I guess the difference between being a business owner is that you directly get remunerated, or the success of your business is a reflection of how you allocate your time. So again, with a leader, it's about how much value they can bring, you know, to add to their CV, to generate revenue for the company they're working for. I'd just bring them back to that, and I'll just ask them to really take the time to think about how they spend their time, because they'll, everyone will, I don't think I've ever met anyone that says they've got loads and loads and loads of time. You have to, you know, you have to be really, really diligent about how you allocate that time. And that, in, for me, that would be on a Sunday evening. And I'm doing this with my hands as I'm talking to you, but it's like literally moving blocks around and asking myself, do I need to do that meeting? You know, do we need an hour, or can I do 45 minutes? You know, can I start that meeting earlier? You know, can I delegate that out? You know, can that email be forwarded on to somebody else to deal with? So it's just constantly being in that mode of challenging how valuable your time is and what you need to do with it.
I think as well, just a really interesting thing to think about, if you work for somebody else, say if you're on a salary of £50,000 a year and you're working 12 hours a day or 13 hours a day because you're time poor, the best pay rise you can get is to delegate more and get your working life down to 8 hours a day, or better still, six. And all of a sudden, you're twice as rich. Yeah. Like, and that's, you're up in your hourly rate. But the amount of people I know that are on 50, 60, 70 grand salaries, but are doing 13 hour days, it's not actually a great salary.
And that isn't sustainable. So as a leader, a good leader will, you know, should see their team struggling and should sometimes sacrifice things getting done for the, you know, for the sake of their team. And because if you want them to be motivated long-term, then they need to be able to do their job. And a good leader will do that. A good leader will say, you're not allowed to do that today. You need to switch off.
Yeah. We talk about the performance curve and that needing to bake in rest and learning time. And that falls different for everybody. And, you know, I do think it's interesting. I didn't know that about you, actually, that you're really not a morning person, which I do find funny, because Ross, your business partner, is a 5 a.m.er like myself. And then he has an afternoon nap every day, doesn't he? So you two operate on very different schedules. But for me, my Friday afternoons are my absolute downtime. I am not doing anything of value in a Friday afternoon. So I don't even put anything in. I just literally, if I can empty my inbox or if I can plan for my next week, that's a win. But there's no point in putting work in then, because it's never good.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Fridays is the same for me. You know, I'm pretty relaxed on a Friday.
But Friday morning, my 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. amazing.
Yeah.
But Friday afternoon, no point.
Yeah, and that's where you've got the self-awareness to understand what works for you, which I think is key as a leader, is to make sure you do what works for you. Yeah, I think that's a really important thing to understand.
The next thing I wanted just to chat about was being calm and present. You know, my observation of you is that you very rarely I've never seen you lose your temper, actually, and I can't imagine you do in a work setting. But how do you juggle? And obviously people have anxieties and things like that, but what are your habits of mind to keep you calm, keep you present, keep you intentional?
I know we were going to talk about it anyway. I think journaling is super helpful for that in terms of setting intentions. Do you want me to elaborate on that?
Yeah, please.
So in the last, my business partner is a massive advocate of journaling and has had an impact, a massive influence on me. Whilst I might seem calm on the exterior, I'm not always as calm on the inside. I think what I've come to understand as a leader is that you, as part of that leadership role, you will always have to deal with shit, and you will constantly be kind of pivoting between highs, lows, you know, dealing with crap, you know, and then having wins. And I think if you are on that, if you're too high when it's great, and you're too low when it's low, that is just super tiring and super draining. So I think over the years, I've built a resilience around dealing with those wins and dealing with those losses and staying, you know, relatively neutral to it. you know, not getting too flustered when something doesn't go well, because it happens every day. You know, every day we'll, you know, three of our guys off sick. It's, you know, there's nothing we can do about it apart from just deal with it. You know, we had a big win financially 3 months ago. You know, I didn't go out and celebrate because it's just part of being a leader is kind of just being as neutral as you can and you know, not getting too excited when it's good and or bad. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing is journaling, I find personally, is a really good way of getting, of kind of brain dumping all of the things that you're going on in your head. And how I do that is to literally get my journal out in the morning, and before I do anything, is to literally just start writing. And that might be around my relationship at work with my business partner. That might be around money. It might be around home, whatever it is, but just to kind of start writing. And then what I'll do is typically I'll have a thing where I'll write intentions and I will, there'll be things going on in my head. I mean, for example, with a business partner recently, I'd been quite sort of frustrated and agitated by some of the things that had happened. And I'd written down to be kind in how I dealt with that, with those situations, because as Rach, you've said you've never seen me angry, but I can be really direct with people, and sometimes that can be quite cutting. So by writing down my intention to be kind of kind in that feedback and in that moment, that then just set me up for dealing with those situations properly.
Do you find once you've done the journaling, you start to develop a pattern then of, this situation has happened, so because of that, my intentions are X, and therefore the next time that comes around, Jono, you've almost got an automatic response ready for that situation. And is it the process of actually writing it down?
Yes.
That helps that work.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think you're never finished in terms of how you deal with, you know, with coworkers or people that work for you. You know, you're going to constantly make mistakes. So I wouldn't say that there's a situation, I write something down and then I deal with it and then that's done. It's just a constantly ever evolving thing. But I think just to kind of air what is going on in your head and put it on paper really helps. There's a magic in journaling. It's sort of quite hard to quantify at times to exactly what it is and how it works well for me.
I'm going to ask the question that people are probably thinking or saying to themselves now is, I don't have time for journaling. And how often do you do it? Do you do it every day? And how do you find time?
Yeah, and how long? How long do you spend on it?
Yes.
Well, I don't journal every day, and I think this is again around, people set themselves up to fail when they plan. I find that people set, you know, they set their week out and they don't have any flexibility around having to deal with an email from the CEO or your line manager or a complaint from somebody. So that the first thing is, you need to make sure that when you're planning, you need to give yourself realistic time to do stuff and be flexible around change. And what I would say to anybody is, because typically, especially January, I'm going to go to the gym every day or I'm going to journal every day. Well, don't do that. Just have a minimum of, I'm going to do a minimum of three. And if you do it four times or five times in the week, brilliant. So I think if you then looked, if you zoomed out, if I tick off every day that I do my journal and I zoomed out over the year, that would look really consistent. But what it isn't, it's not me journaling every day. But it, what it is consistency. And I give myself a break if I don't do it for a couple of days. Because it's enough. It's good enough. To answer your last point, you have, as a leader, you have to make time to work on yourself or on your job, maybe in this instance, or on my business. If you don't, there's not going to be any evolution. So you have to make that time.
So really the journaling, I mean, I journal. I'm not a daily person, but again, I hadn't thought of that thing about if you were to helicopter up, there would be some consistency. For me, it's a minimum of once a week. That's enough for me. But what I like, what it is it's an exercise in self-reflection. So it is when you read back and you get it on paper, you don't have conversations in your head the same way that you get them on paper, because you can talk in your head. I don't know if you know this stat, you can talk to yourself in your head at 700 words a minute, which is where anxiety comes from. Everything's ramped up. We catastrophize, we fortune tell, we know what's going to happen in our heads. But when you write it on paper, you can only write at 150 words a minute. And that's if you're a fast writer, because we can type far faster than we can write, which is why you have to handwrite.
Yeah.
But that process of writing onto paper is an exercise in self-reflection. You are making sense of the behaviors, thoughts, thinking patterns, feelings you are having, and you're having to face them because the pen is hitting the paper.
Yeah.
And you don't get that if you have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, 100%. It's and I never look back on my journals.
No, you don't need to, because the process is the learning, not the outcome. And I think that's really important what you said around that if you don't work on yourself as a leader, there is no evolution. So it's about this time and prioritization. You know, you can say, I don't have time for that. What you are saying to yourself is, I don't have time to evolve myself. Now, absolutely. That becomes a very different conversation.
Yeah. And as a leader in a corporate environment, you know, ultimately, most people will be wanting to climb the corporate ladder and be paid, you know, be paid more and
sort of do a better job or just enjoy what you do more. Yeah,
exactly. And the only way to do that is to invest in yourself and work on yourself or on your job as well. I think as a leader in a corporate environment, I still think you can work on your job. People say about working on your business, you can work on your job as well.
Yeah. Jono, off the wall kind of question here. Have you thrown your journals away?
No, but it's a really good question. I've just finished one actually, and I have thought about that. I haven't thrown it away yet, but yeah, it's a good question. Why do you ask?
Because, well, I guess there's an expectation if you don't throw them away, is at some point you will want to go back and read them. Because you said, you know, I don't read them back. So if you're not going to read them back, is that an intention, right? It's going to, you know, it's the process of doing it. So why keep them?
Sorry, John, just jump in. If you ever wanted to write a book, I suppose they're a great thing to keep. I actually do read mine back. I am not often, but once a quarter, I will look back. And I will look at how far I've come. And that is a wonderful thing to look back and read. And I can see myself ironing out, like the highs and lows being less extreme to your point.
Is that quite cathartic or just
very cathartic.
Developmental?
Yeah, cathartic. I fold over the odd page of like, so I journaled things I was proud of that I'd have achieved in 2022. And I actually have read that back a couple of times just this week. And we're only on like, you know, 4th of Jan. And intentions I read back on, but not everything. But you are right, John. Like, why would, there's an expectation if you keep it. So I do know people that just throw theirs away and they, it doesn't matter. It's, whether you use it or not, it's personal preference.
I think it would it's a really good question, actually, John. I think it would depend on what you'd written in there. Maybe, like, I guess I'm thinking aloud, if you'd gone through a painful period and maybe you journaled, you know, some deep, insightful stuff, it might be that what I'm coming to my mind is that you burn it. You know, maybe you burn that journal to kind of discard that period of your life, maybe.
Yeah.
I wonder if that would actually sort of cleanse the, I don't know, the bad thoughts sort of thing.
I think it would be. We'll move on. The last point before we wrap up that it would be amiss of us to chat to you about is accountability and intention. So how do you set yourself up? You know, we're at the beginning of the year, whether you love them or not, some people might have New Year's resolutions or not. Either way, at some point in this first quarter, you know, people need to be goal setting if they want to work on themselves, develop their job, develop their business. And with any goal setting, as coaches, comes self-accountability, setting intentions, being aware of your values. What's your take and what's your mindset as we approach a new year on accountability and setting intentions?
I think there's two sides to this. One is in terms of accountability of others. I mean, that is pretty much what I do, is kind of hold people to account and kind of documenting what is agreed. Again, taking notes and holding clients to account, that is key.
Just to stop you on that, because I think that's a really interesting point. I actually think there's a really good learning in that we haven't articulated. The role of a leader, first and foremost, is to hold people to account. It's not to get shit done.
Correct. Yeah.
So maybe that's just a big mindset shift for people that are time poor.
Yes. And again, going back to an actual example with the company I've been consulting with for the last sort of 4 or 5 months, you know, is getting the CEO, the MDs into the mindset of, you don't need to do this yourself. It is your responsibility to set out the parameters of what you expect. In this instance, it was 6 bullet points to start with, and give it to these people. You pass on the responsibility of you doing the work to them, and you then consistently hold them to account at the same time, on the same day, every week or every month. And there's a magic in that, because there's a healthy fear from the employee's perspective, because they don't want to turn up to that meeting and lose face. But it is, as you've said, Rach, it's a mindset shift of, like, here you go. I'm passing the baton to you. I'm here to support, but this is the expectation.
Mm-hmm. And then I interrupted you. What about the holding yourself accountable and your intentions for a new year? Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm not brilliant actually at being accountable, ironically, and it's something I need to be better at. To make myself accountable, I have to kind of physically tell people what is going to get done at what point, so that through the pain and healthy fear, it forces me to get things done. Again, journaling for me is key. Some of the biggest achievements I've had in my life have been around taking the time to write down in detail what it is that I'm setting to achieve. But those goals evolve as well. And I'm not, these days, I don't tend to say, in 3 years I want to be here, in 5 years I want to be here. It's very much a case of a bit more of a holistic approach to that. But in terms of journaling, one of the things that I map out is, I in my journal, at the last bit, I have a section which is called thank yous. And thank yous is basically giving thanks for, it sounds really woo-woo, doesn't it? When you're really spiritual, when you talk about it out loud. And it's, I'm thanking, the higher power or whatever it is you, or whoever your God is, for the things that are coming down the line. And what's been fascinating is the consistency of that has been amazing. And what I've seen has been amazing. And actually, specifically around revenue and income, I've started writing down a number, and that number feels real. So if you were to ask me, if Johnny, my bank manager, to ask me what I was earning, I would automatically go to that number because it's so ingrained in my head from writing it down on a 4 or 5 times a week basis.
So that's practicing gratitude and a little bit of the secret around positivity and visualizing what success looks like. But then what the secret book doesn't do is practice accountability, which is then what behaviors, intentions, goals are you setting yourselves to achieving that?
So to summarize, in terms of goal setting, it's a moving target for me. I've had a lot of success around articulating the specific words and the specificity of things, and writing them down helps for me. I know some people, they're more visual. I think I'm more of a writing down person.
And you mentioned that nowadays it's less about a 1 year, a 3 year, a 5 year plan, and more about the holistic self. Just give us a few examples of that.
So in my journal, I would document, one of the things I wrote years ago was around feeling healthy and being slim and traveling the world and competing in endurance events. And I wrote that in 2015. And ironically, I'm at that place. I'm not competing professionally or anything, but that's exactly what I do. And I think, again, just by, it's not always about numbers. It's not always about how much money you've got in your bank account or how big your business is. I think articulating a feeling of what you want and what that looks like is as important as having something specifically measurable.
Yeah, I like that. Anything to add, John, before we wrap up?
No, it's been very insightful, very thought-provoking, Jono. I really like the idea around this writing stuff down, making yourself more accountable. I think we do carry a lot of stuff around in our heads. And as you say, Rachel, that's not really going to be helping anybody that's got anxiety, because you just keep it there and it doesn't really go anywhere, does it? So
it doesn't it? And I think get it on paper, there's something quite cathartic about that.
Yeah. So if you're going to sum all these, we ask everybody who comes on the podcast, Jono, to give us their 3 leadership essentials. Could you let us into your world of leadership essentials?
Yeah, no, and by the way, this was a really good thought-provoking task for me, because when Rach asked me, I'd done some prep, and I tend to just run on autopilot. So actually thinking about it was really helpful. So I've written a few things down, but I think the key thing is around self-awareness. One of the key things is self-awareness. Like knowing your strengths and weaknesses and surrounding yourself with people, a team of people who are better than you. I think if you can do that, that is a sign of a good leader who's just got better people in the room than them. Integrity is key, and making decisions for the benefit. I'm going to give you 4, if that's okay.
That's all right.
I think seeing the bigger picture and opportunities, so that's more around vision, and opportunities disguised as challenges. you know, as a leader, you're going to be dealing with shit every day. And, you know, typically a, you know, one of your team hands their notice in, and the default go-to in many instances would be, oh, that's a night, you know, it's a nightmare. Well, you know, I would always try and see if that is an opportunity to recruit somebody better. You know, and where is the opportunity within what is perceived as a challenge?
Love it. And the fourth?
It sounds, again, maybe a little bit woo-woo, but is with, in particular, I have conversations with one of my team, and she's a perfectionist. And I always just say to her, are you doing your best? And that sounds weird and patronizing, but, you know, ultimately, if you're giving your best and you're controlling what you can control, then that is enough. And once you've done your best and you've worked hard, it's then about, you know, letting go and allowing the, you know, surrendering to what is going to happen and what the outcome will be.
Yeah,
that's really helpful, I think, for perfectionists. There's lots of perfectionists around. I think to see it as am I doing my best?
Yeah.
It puts a different nuance on it.
Absolutely. I mean, to bring that to life, my business partner recently was tearing his hair out because we'd had a lot of sickness and illness in our business, and he was just getting really like irate with it. And, you know, I just said to him, look, you know, are you doing your best? Is there anything else you can do? And he's like, no. I was like, all right, fine. That's it. We move on. The world doesn't end. We carry on.
And thereby you build that resilience, don't you? You know, I think when we were talking about different generations earlier on, resilience is going to be key. So that's a really good question for people at that end of the generations, if you like.
Just to wrap up from my end, I think it's going to be really fascinating to see what happens in the next year.
Yeah.
And I think that resilience is going to become forced. I think the younger generation in particular are going to have to develop a resilience. And as an employer, again, only a prediction, but I think it's going to be a real good opportunity to have to build a business, because you'll have a lot of really high quality people available who have lost jobs. So the market will become in our favor. That is my opinion.
There's creating a challenge out of an opportunity for you. Yeah, love it.
Wonderful. So much good stuff in there, Jono. I think there was a couple of amazing sound bites that I loved. The first bit was around the Sunday preparing for your time, being a leader and asking the first question is, who can I delegate this to, rather than what do I need to do, was the second thing for me. The third thing was draft one, V1, or good enough is good enough. As a leader, you can never do it all. And the taking the holistic approach and really thinking about your own self-awareness, that, you know, you've got to prioritize your home life, your personal development. If you are not working on yourself, you are not evolving. I think they were the fundamental takeouts for me for any leader. And I think whether you're a business owner or you work in a corporate, they would apply. It's been an absolute pleasure. You do work with people that are, you know, business owners or in jobs and maybe want to work and live differently. If people are interested in working with you or hearing a little bit more about you or being coached by you, where can they find you?
On our website, ascend360.co.uk. And you can check out Instagram and Facebook, Jonathan Mills and Ross Cooney. We put videos out with some snippets of our thoughts and what we do. So yeah,
there's some motivational goodness in that stuff. We'll put the links to your Instagram actually, and LinkedIn on the show notes. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Jono. Happy New Year. And yeah, thanks. No, thanks.
No, I really enjoyed it. Thanks. And really, really useful to kind of to think about my own leadership styles and the things that I'm doing. So no, thank you. That was really good.
Wonderful. Thanks for your time, Jonathan. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to meet you. Thank you.
Good night. Cheers, John.
You've been listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching.